Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It is time for kids and young adults to head back to school, and many students, families, and school staff are navigating unparalleled times from mass shootings to COVID precautions and an ever more polarizing political climate that directly impacts schools. Students navigating all these external influences can weigh heavy on their mental health, and they might not be equipped or prepared for the pressures. Joining us is Dr. Nicole Stelter, Director of Behavioral Health for Blue Shield of California, to discuss ways to ease the transition for back-to-school mental health. Good morning, Dr. Stelter.
Good morning, Vicky. Thanks for having me.
If you're a family preparing to go back to school, how would you like them to view back-to-school in the days approaching this transition?
Yeah, so that is a great question, I think, and it really speaks to what sometimes we as parents expect or what our own experiences were maybe as kids or what we worry about from a previous year, from our kids' experience. And sometimes it is enough for us to remember that what our experience was or is, our hopes and expectations aren't our kids'. That's just not the same thing. Being able to leave that kind of as an open channel for communication, hearing about what your kid is concerned about or what they're worrying about versus putting your own, kind of stacking your own expectations on top of all of the things that they're trying to navigate. Sometimes that's the best place to start.
Right. It's not like an on and off switch. Like, you know, you go back to school and everything
exactly.
Changes. You want to kind of ease into it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of times what we'll talk about, in the mental health community too, is, you know, just some of the simple things are often the best things to do. So making sure that the first day of school is not your first day of planning, give yourself and your kids a chance to kind of move into that new schedule. We spend so much time over the summer kind of more loosely scheduled. There's a lot of free time. And then all of a sudden you go right back to getting up, getting ready to go to work and school, packing lunches, all of that. And it's a lot to transition to. So starting ahead of time, give yourself and your kids a chance to almost like practice that new routine or the it might be an old routine that you're going back to, but it's going to definitely be different than what you had over the summertime.
We're still learning the impacts of the last 2.5 years, what it had on students for a myriad of reasons, not only distance learning. What are you seeing in children and students and families that are talking to you in your practice?
I think for the most part, I know we definitely are, a lot of us are seeing more concern around anxiety and worry, depression, sadness. I think what is really challenging with information being so freely available for a lot of our kiddos, especially older ones who are online maybe more, watching the news more, talking with friends about what's going on in the world or in their local communities, there's just a lot to kind of worry about. And sometimes our kids, they may or may not have the words to fully express how they're feeling about something, or they may worry about saying it wrong. They may worry about worrying their parents or their loved ones, especially if the family is going through something like a job loss, or there's been other loss or grief in the family. So they'll hold back. They won't speak up maybe as much. And that's a lot to manage as a growing person, extra worry and stress and anxiety.
And it's not like adults are immune from all of this as well. What advice do you have for parents or guardians? You know, they want to help their kids navigate this, but they're also shouldering a lot on themselves.
Yeah, for sure. I think so. There are a lot of great resources available. And I think one thing I would say too is there is kind of a fine line between minimizing something that's going on for your kid that might be a concern for health or mental health, but also not pathologizing it, right? So not all stress is bad stress. There is a little bit of worry, a little bit of nervous excitement, those kinds of things. you want to help your kid manage that. You don't want to take it away. You don't want to kind of lawnmower in front of them and make it so that they don't experience any kind of distress. What you're looking out for is when it really starts to disrupt, you know, sleeping, or it's the only thing they talk about, or they're not eating, or they're eating too much, that there's kind of a change in what you would expect is normal behavior for them. Mm. But you don't want to get rid of all stress, right? It's not an entirely horrible thing. Some of this is just about new experiences, building resilience, teaching them that they aren't helpless, that they can be empowered. And that's part of our job as parents and as in guardians. And I think the other thing is there are so many resources available online, right? And some of it is just kind of curating yourself through which ones are the most reputable, the easiest to use. We have a site that we use called Blue Sky. It's blueshieldca.com. And part of what I really like about this resource is there's information right away available for you as you sign on, but there are then also links to other reputable sites that you can kind of go out to. And so instead of having to sort through a whole bunch of different sites, you can go to one, and then that can take you to others as well as you need to.
Do you have some advice as to when an adult can identify when stress might be beneficial to a child and when it isn't?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think it's, so again, it's a little bit of a fine line. Usually what somebody like, you know, me would be looking for is if it seems like it's disruptive in a way. So if you think about when you're nervous about something new as an adult, or you're excited, you're nervous about starting a new job or trying out something new, there can be some really good things to that. It's part of being human is that nervousness and taking healthy risks and doing something new and learning that you can do it. And that sometimes you can even maybe make a mistake or fail a little bit and still, you know, do well. I think where it starts to cross into the line of something you want to worry about is, like I said, when it's overly, you know, you find that your kid is overly worrying, or that's all they talk about, or there's a problem with sleep. Sorry about that. But yeah, so when the biggest thing is a change in behavior, that's that line that I'm talking about.
When it comes to actually, you know, teachers and school staff, you know, oftentimes they can be that front line of support and offering resources and listening and identifying some issues. But life outside of the classroom also goes on, and they've been shouldering their own share of challenges over the last 2.5 years. I mean, especially with distance and hybrid learning. What advice do you have for people that are taking care of children on campus?
Yeah, you know, I think we need to pay more attention to our staff and teachers at all, you know, school levels, right? Whether we're talking about high schools, preschools, all those things in between. So I think one of the resources that a lot of times we forget and that a lot of school districts have in place are employee assistance programs or EAPs. Those are great consultation, kind of one-stop shop consultation spaces where you can do short-term counseling. You can get referrals for other kinds of services like caregiving services, legal services. It kind of runs the gamut. You have to really look into what your individual district has set up for your employee assistance program. But we forget that that support system sometimes, because if my employer's paid for this, so it may not be confidential. And that's not true. It is confidential. It's the same confidentiality talking to a therapist through your EAP as it would be seeing me in my office, in my private practice. So that's one place I like to remind people of. And I think the other is many districts have some, and certainly in the last few, in the last couple of years and few months, have really taken a lot of time to set up safety programs, provide more infrastructure and communication around, how their purposes, call for more information. And they also make, give us to go and ask ask questions, make comments. And so I would really encourage people both in the community, as well as teachers and staff, to make their voices heard. Our teachers are as important as our kids. They're who look out for our kids when they're at school, making sure that we as parents and community are advocating for them as much as we are for our kids, I think is just as important.
You know, a heavier but also necessary topic and reality, a report and research from UC Davis shows that domestic violence increased during the COVID-19 isolation, especially, you know, going back to 2020 when we were staying at home. And I remember having discussions right. with providers back in 2020 on the front end, and they were concerned that signs of abuse would remain behind closed doors, because often teachers and school staff can be the first eyes to something like that. And people were at home, exactly. remote learning. What resources are available for youth when they're home? Isn't a safe place for seeking resources and help?
Yeah, that is a really great question, Vicki. I'm glad you brought this up too, because I know this is really it was certainly a growing concern early on, and I think it's still something that we worry about, because although offices, you know, communities, schools are opening back up, The social isolation that we've all kind of been a part of and managing through over the past few months and couple of years is still going to kind of follow us in a way that is going to, you know, social interaction is going to be different for a while. And so that part of that natural, knowing your students, knowing the grownups they can trust, those things have to be rebuilt. And in the meantime, we worry about some of the signs and symptoms of violence in the home continuing to be missed, right? So one of the best resources I like to refer to is called NAMI on Campus. It's NAMI and then on campus. That is a great resource for all ages, a place that you can go to get information, whether it's related to violence, to mental health, and also substance abuse. It's important to call that out deliberately sometimes when we talk about behavioral health or mental health, emotional well-being. We forget to deliberately call out substance abuse concerns, same as what you've called out, called attention to deliberately around violence. Those are all important, separate but related issues that we want to pay special attention to. So that's one good site. I would also say too, that as our, you know, this is part of what I was trying to refer to earlier in with empowering our kids, is making sure that they also know when and if they need help, that they can get it, that they can go to the staff at their school, they can go to a teacher, they can go to a trusted coach. There are a lot of places that they can ask for help.
Dr. Stelter, we're out of time, but thank you so much. Dr. Nicole Stelter is a director of behavioral health for Blue Shield of California. That is it for Insight today. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.